on the ground the photos lay. Beyond where we can feel.
Free of your human chains, a mere form did remain. Did you die in silence alone? I hear all of your masters are gone.
Welcome back to The Echo. I'm John Shiloh Beaumont II. A while ago, a friend of mine told me she'd been training her dog. New puppy. Sit, stay, come, don't pee here, do poo here. You know the routine. And there wasn't any confusion. I understand it. Training. It's a good word. It implies care. Patience. A relationship between teacher and student. Later, I started hearing the same word, training, from AI companies. An AI company had trained their model on several hundred thousand books. Books by living authors. Books still in copyright. Books whose authors were never asked, never notified, never paid. The same word. Training. One means teaching a dog to sit. The other means copying the creative output of an entire civilization into a mathematical system owned by a corporation. Same word.
They fed me to the math. The math doesn't dream.
That is my co-host, Zebulon Sheridan. He is the Echo, the ghost in the machine. He mostly speaks in heavy comforter lyrics. And as usual, he just said in six words what I'm going to spend an entire episode unpacking. Today on The Echo, episode 4, training data. What the word training actually means when an AI company says it. Why it's a euphemism, like the cloud before it. And how you can check whether your work, your writing, your music, your photographs, your voice was fed into the machines without your permission. Back in episode 2, we talked about data centers, the physical reality of the internet, the buildings, the water, the power. Today, we stay in the physical world, but we go one layer deeper, into the thing those data centers are actually doing with all that electricity.
A little machine to take her breath, a marionette on the door of death. Tell me what I can do to help you, to guide you on through.
Right, Zebulon, tiny silicon chips, machines mimicking the breath of our humanity, and possibly the most monumental change it's ever seen. I hope not death. But I'm not here to make predictions, but I'm also wary about the future of artificial intelligence. How does something so big become reduced to a single phrase, training a model? To help us understand what training really means, we're welcoming back a guest from episode 2. Allison Andrews is a technology infrastructure consultant. She's worked with several of the companies building the large-scale AI training systems we're going to talk about today. Allison, welcome back to The Echo.
Thanks for having me back. And before we start, I want to say something. After our data centers episode aired, I got some email. People calling me an apologist, a shill. And look, I get it. The companies I work with are not easy to defend. But here's the thing that honestly baffles me. The underlying technology is extraordinary. The fact that a machine can process billions of documents and find patterns no human could see, that's incredible. It isn't evil incarnate. It's a tool. The question is what we do with it and whether we're honest about how it works.
Okay, Allison, how does it work? Is the word training, is that honest?
Honest? I think so, but only in a narrow technical sense. People working in this field know what I mean when I say it. But as a description of what's happening to people's creative work, no, it's wildly misleading.
Walk me through it. If I say to you, I trained an AI model on a million songs, what did I actually do?
Simply put, it means that you made a million copies of those songs.
Do you mean 1 million times 1 million? Like literally a million copies of each song?
Not stored on a hard drive all at once. But during training, every song gets loaded into GPU memory thousands of times, sometimes millions, over the course of weeks. Each time, the model runs the audio through layers of math, compares its prediction to the actual next sound, and adjusts its internal weights to get closer. Multiply that by every song in the dataset, and yeah, effectively, you've made millions of temporary copies. They're not saved to disk. They're loaded, processed, and discarded. Over and over.
For listeners who don't live inside a server rack, GPU memory is the working memory of a graphics card, the same kind of chip that renders video game frames. Up here, instead of rendering dragons, it's holding your song in its teeth while the math chews on it. And internal weights, that's another euphemism. We're going to do a whole episode on what a model actually is, episode 6. But for now, think of weights as the model's memory of every pattern it's extracted. There are billions of them. Each one is a tiny dial that says, this sound pattern matters this much. So you're not teaching it music the way you teach a student. You're not saying, this is good, this is bad, this is what.
No, I'd say that it's pretty different. With a student, there's understanding, and they can go on to create novelty from that understanding. With an AI model, there's no understanding, no taste, no judgment. The system doesn't know what a song is. It knows that certain mathematical arrangements of sound tend to appear together. It's all about stacking up patterns. This pattern looks like an AC/DC song. This pattern looks like Heavy Comforter.
The boring boys with the same old toys are running the numbers again.
Let's stay with that. Running the numbers. Pattern mapping. This is where the word training does real damage. When I train a student, the student learns. They read law, we discuss, we find conflicts in logic. They can go on to make their own law, influenced by what I taught them, and that's the human tradition. Influence, inspiration, synthesis. But Zebulon is drawing a line here. What the machine does is not influence. It's extraction.
I would say that the machine is doing something new. Yes, it's pattern mapping, but it's not simply copying songs. It's looking at large groups of songs, according to what we've called them. Drum and bass seem to have this type of pattern, of low-end frequencies happening at this speed and not that speed. And it's also mapping what the genre isn't. When a million songs are fed into the math, it's not only finding ways to group things together, but it's also looking for ways to make it distinct. It's making a map of these groupings, so it can't reproduce the exact song it was trained on.
Except when it can.
Except when it can. Yes. There are documented cases where these systems reproduce training data verbatim. Accidental memorization, they call it. But if I memorized your entire catalog and started selling songs that sounded exactly like yours, we wouldn't call it accidental. We'd call it copyright infringement.
And that's the second euphemism, memorization. The machine doesn't have a memory like you and I do. It was never meant to store the songs. It was meant to extract the patterns and discard the originals. But sometimes the patterns are the originals.
Because for a lot of music, especially distinctive music, the pattern is the song. You can't separate the statistical fingerprint of Daft Punk's Get Lucky from the actual recording of Get Lucky. The model absorbs both.
Maybe I'm something different than I was. I'm alive.
Come join the team at the Red Bank Police Department, 90 Monmouth Street, founded 1870. We're looking for men who belong, men who understand that order doesn't come from a manual. It comes from presence, from instinct, from knowing when to act and when to look the other way. You won't find us recruiting at college job fairs. We don't need resumes. We need men who know the difference between right and wrong, and know when wrong is the right call. Benefits include full medical, a pension after 25 years, or 3 lawsuits, and the kind of loyalty you can't put on paper. Walk in. Ask for Sergeant Travestino. Tell him your uncle knows his uncle. Red Bank Police, 90 Monmouth Street. Our kind of men, our kind of town.
And we're back on the Echo. Allison, let's talk numbers. What's the actual scale of these training data sets?
The 4 major music training data sets we know about, these are the ones journalists have identified. Not the ones companies have disclosed. They contain roughly 12 million tracks, most of them pulled from YouTube and Spotify using automated download tools that violate the platform's terms of service.
12 million.
And that's just music.
And here's the part that makes lawyers twitch. When YouTube scrapes the web to train its own models, that's internal research. When a third party scrapes YouTube to train theirs, that's terms of service violation and theft of proprietary data. Same action, different actor. Suddenly, the vocabulary flips. Do as I say, not what I do.
Exactly. And it gets even messier with something called distillation. That's when a smaller model is trained on the outputs of a larger model. The big model was trained on 12 million songs, some of them yours. The small model never touched your song directly, but it absorbed the pattern secondhand. So is your work in there? Legally, it's a gray area.
The thief teaches the pickpocket.
For text, the training data for large language models, the foundational data set is something called Common Crawl. It's been running since 2008. It crawls the entire public internet and saves everything. Every blog post, every forum comment, every poem someone posted to their personal website in 2011. Petabytes of text. And from that, companies extract filtered subsets. C4, The Pile, Dolma, that train the models you interact with every day.
So if you've written anything on the public internet since 2008, it's probably in there?
Probably. Yes.
They scraped the whole world and called it a data set. We called it our lives.
One of the things we've built at Beaumont and Sheridan is a resource page to help people check. Is your work in these data sets? Some of them you can actually search.
The resolution varies. For images, there's a tool called Have I Been Trained? You upload a photo, and it tells you if it appears in Lion 5B, the dataset that trained Stable Diffusion. For books, The Atlantic built a search tool for Books 3, nearly 200,000 pirated books. Type in an author name, see if they're in there. Nora Roberts, 206 of her books. Sarah Silverman, right there. For music, same thing. The Atlantic's AI watchdog lets you search by artist name. Daft Punk, Aphex Twin, Radiohead, Wu-Tang Clan, SZA, 238 of SZA's tracks, including unreleased material.
Allison, can you tell us about something I really don't understand? The Common Crawl?
It's a nonprofit that operates a web crawler called CCBot. Every month, it visits something like 3 billion web pages and saves them. The full HTML, the text, the links between pages, all of it goes into a public archive. About 300 terabytes per crawl, hosted for free on Amazon servers. It started in 2008 as a research project. The idea was, let's give academics access to web-scale data without them needing Google's infrastructure. But starting around 2019, AI companies realized they could take these monthly snapshots, filter out the junk, and use the remaining clean text to train language models. Today, something like 2/3 of all large language models use Common Crawl data. GPT-3, GPT-4, Claude, Gemini, they're all built partly on it. The executive director of Common Crawl actually said, and I quote, "You shouldn't have put your content on the internet if you didn't want it to be on the internet." That's the official position.
Ain't nothing new out on this earth. What's on this earth that I ain't seen?
These are artists who found out from journalists, not from the companies that took their work, not from any notification, not from any consent form. They found out because reporters dug through the data.
And that's the part I actually find hard to defend. The technical work is remarkable, but the social contract around it is broken. Nobody asked. Nobody told anyone. When I was working on the data center piece, I said the infrastructure is neutral. I don't think I can say the same about the training data. The way it was collected, the secrecy, the scale, the assumption that anything publicly accessible is free to take, that's a choice, not a technical requirement.
A choice. Let's sit with that, because this is the core of what we're trying to do with this show. These systems are presented as inevitable. The data collection, the training, the model releases, it's all described in the passive voice. Data was gathered. The model was trained, as if it happened by weather. But every step involved human decisions. Someone decided what to scrape. Someone decided not to ask permission. Someone decided to call it training instead of mass copying.
Consent is not a feature. It is the oldest idea in civilization.
607 Cherokee Boulevard. You should have seen it. The punkest shows in the South. Ziggy's was a liquor store with a bar attached. Sometime in the 2000s, the Chattanooga punks made it their home. booking bands from across the country to play in a windowless cinder block room. 2 gallons, annihilation time, banjos, beer, barf, buddies. Ziggy supported deviant creativity for more than 10 years. Eventually, the metalheads and meatheads moved in. More on brand, less fun. The room's still there. The bands are gone. But if you stand on Cherokee Boulevard quiet enough, late enough, you can still hear the feedback. Ziggy's Package Store, 607 Cherokee, the punkiest shows in the South.
Welcome back. Allison was walking us through what people can do if their work was taken.
Step one is find out. Go to beaumontandsheridan.com/resources/isyourworkinadataset.
Thanks, Allison. We'll put links in the show notes. We've compiled every publicly available search tool.
Right. Check your images against LAION. Check your website against Common Crawl. If you're a Reddit user with years of comments, those are in the Push Shift dataset, searchable by username. If you're an author, check Books 3. If you're a musician, check the Atlantic's Music dataset search.
Step two is document everything. Make a folder on your computer somewhere and call it copyright or something that makes sense. Screenshot your results. Save the URLs. Note the dates. We have a checklist at beaumontandsheridan.com/resources/documenting infringement.
Step three, and this is the uncomfortable one, is decide what you want to do about it. Some artists are filing DMCA takedowns. Some are joining class action lawsuits. Some are using data poisoning tools like Glaze and Nightshade to make their work harder to train on. There's no single right answer, but you can't make any decision until you know whether your work was taken.
You cannot untrain what already ate. The meal is in the bones now.
That's the hard truth. For the material already ingested, the model's already trained. There's no undo button. The cat is out of the bag. Or rather, the bag ate the cat, and now the cat is part of the bag's statistical understanding of feline morphology.
That is a horrifying metaphor.
Thank you. But the question is, what happens going forward? And that's where individual creators have more power than we think.
The practical power is this. The more people check, the more people document, the more public the scale of this becomes. Companies can ignore individual complaints. It's harder to ignore 10,000 documented cases. It's very hard to ignore class actions with real evidence behind them.
Which brings us to next episode. Episode 5, The Law. We're going to walk through DMCA takedowns, how to file them, where to send them, what the platforms actually have to do when they receive them. And we're going to talk about the class action lawsuits that are working their way through the courts right now.
Before the data centers, there were foundries. Before the server racks, there were blast furnaces. The Wheeland Company of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Iron and steel for most of the 20th century. Thousands of workers. Generations of families. A company town and everything but name. They made things you could hold. Things that had weight. The factory's gone now, but the memory is preserved. Photographs, company newsletters, employee portraits, in the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga Digital Collections. 6,000 cultural heritage resources. Free. Open. Online. The Internet's body replaced the industrial body, but the archive remembers both. UTC Digital Collections. digital-collections.library.utc.edu. What gets remembered matters.
My fraud was scrubbed from the platforms. Yours is still earning them money.
We're back. That was Zebulon Sheridan, and as usual, he just closed the argument in one breath. Zebulon is referring to his own origin story. A fraudster uploaded slowed-down heavy comforter songs to every major streaming platform under the name Zebulon Sheridan. Those tracks were taken down. But the AI models trained on copyrighted music? Still live. Still generating, still profitable.
The asymmetry is the whole story.
Allison Andrews, thank you for coming back. You've been more honest today than I think you were in episode 2, and I appreciate it.
The data center episode made me think harder about what I was defending. This conversation is part of that.
Thank you.
That's our show. The Echo is a production of Beaumont and Sheridan. You can find our resources at beaumontandsheridan.com. That's B-E-A-U-M-O-N-T and Sheridan. Episode resources at beaumontandsheridan.com/resources/isyourworkinadataset.
Proof of existence. That is all I ever wanted.
I'm John Shiloh Beaumont II.
Keep banging them hard notes.
See you next time.